Hello, friends. It's this week's Chapo. It's me, Will Meneker. Joining me is, of course, Amber.
Hi, guys.
Felix.
Hello, everybody.
Matt.
Hi.
And our guest this week, we're very lucky to have her because there's a very recent news hook to get into. But we're talking with writer Angela Nagel of The Baffler, Current Affairs, about the alt-right and the online culture wars. Angela, you have an article coming out in this month's, this new issue of Jacobin called Paleocons for Porn. And you're working on a book called Kill All Normies, which I have just told you before we got on the air here are two of my favorite article and book titles I've heard in quite a while. Angela, how are you?
I'm good. I'm proud to say both of those are my own.
That's awesome. Now, I mentioned this sort of news hook angle, and you know, we're recording this on the same day that friend of the show, Milo, has announced his resignation from Breitbart following the cancellation of his book deal after some controversy over past statements he made about having sex with young men.
Yeah, look, I just want to say right now, people don't know about my other job. I am the editor of Breitbart London, and I think all conservatives right now, we need to stand up and start dating children in solidarity with Milo.
If it's good enough for Parliament, it's good enough for pundits.
It's good enough for the bloody Thatcher administration, okay? It better be good enough for Breitbart. But Angela,
he said he's going to launch his own media now, so he doesn't need Breitbart anymore.
So I started a Patreon.
But just to sort of kick things off, I just want to read from the beginning of the article that you wrote for Jacobin. The sort of subhead of it is, the new online right draws on transgressive aesthetics to rebrand conservative politics. It's a contradiction that won't hold. And man, again, I'm glad we have you on because you are being proven right in real time. But I just want to read real quick. A new right is alive in America, and it's weird. While some alt-right figures like Richard Spencer aspire pretentiously to a style of European blood-and-soil right identitarianism, the real creative energy behind the new right-wing sensibility online today springs from anonymous Chan culture. And you talk about how they nihilistically revel in shock, and then you go on, I think, in a really great description here. Chan's culture, shitposting and crap flooding, shares more with the Paris 68 slogan, "It is forbidden to forbid," than it does with Phyllis Schlafly or William F. Buckley. Its dark obsessions with cruelty, rape, humiliation, suicide, murder, race, and genocide taboos have led Chan culture to an avant-garde anti-moral sensibility, not unlike French dramatist Antonin Artaud's Theater of Cruelty. There can be no spectacle without an element of cruelty as the basis of every show. I think that's a very apt description and of describing this kind of weird new online right. But I just want to ask, how did you first get into studying this phenomenon?
I started looking originally at the anti-feminist kind of elements within it. So obviously all the the celibate kind of beta male stuff. And, they love that red pill metaphor as well. And they also talk a lot about kind of civilizational decline. The contradiction that I'm talking about in the article is in both the elements that are preoccupied with gender and sexuality and those that are preoccupied with race. They're totally contradictory because, they constantly, they watch porn constantly, and they, they're totally kind of degenerate, as subcultures, but then they talk about civilizational decline. And I just think, you can't be like an anime Nazi on the internet and, complain about Western cultural standards going down,
Well, I mean, I remember that Richard Spencer tweet where he's tweeting at Rick Wilson, which is, it's like Optimus Prime and Megatron fighting each other in Transformers if one turned into a vibrator and the other turned into a hairdryer. But Spencer said, Anime has done more to preserve European identity than the Republican Party ever has.
Wow.
This is an all-time great tweet.
So, Angela, one of the interesting things about your writing is that you... Well, first of all, you actually do the work that none of us are willing to do, which is to actually like dig through the internet and watch these people and watch a million, you know, Milo and Gavin McInnes videos.
Yeah.
So thank you for your sacrifice.
You're
but
welcome.
Thank you,
also...
for your service, ma'am. I'm saluting you right now.
Ma'am, who is your moderator on the message board?
But you do sort of the work of taxonomy, which I think is interesting because a lot of, I guess, left people kind of have this impulse where like a Nazi is a Nazi is a Nazi. Mm. But these people are not kind of ideologically in step with each other. There's a lot of conflict, as we recently learned. The best anecdote I had for this, I found really fascinating. Nick Mullen, my roommate, tried to have the hacker Weave on his podcast. And Weave used to be more of a, you know, one of these kind of postmodernist internet Nazis. Then he went to jail where he made a lot of new friends. And he came out and was like a more like serious Nazi. And he told Nick that he would not do his podcast because it's called Cumtown. And he was worried about his new serious Nazi friends thinking he was degenerate and libertine. So I guess I sort of wanted to talk about, you know, you make these distinctions between like alt-right and alt-light and the difference between them and traditional conservatives, even though they all kind of joined together to support Trump. They're very different camps.
Yeah, it's interesting how they all love Trump. They all love Trump. Like, that's the one thing that seems to unite them completely. And even, you know, so, but I think it's fascinating how there's loads of internal rivalry and, you know, they're more kind of bitchy and sectarian than the left is. And actually even when Milo's whole life was like collapsing in the last kind of 48 hours, I checked to see what various people were saying and Richard Spencer was sort of gloating on Twitter, you know. So, I mean, they do hate each other quite a lot. I guess the thing is, I don't really buy the we'll say the pure or the hard alt-right's kind of snobbishness about the alt-light, you know, saying that they're degenerate. I mean, if you're like a 30-year-old man going around calling people normies and like being, you know, and talking in this serious way about like, you know, anime, I don't know. I just think I don't really buy that any of them are really conservative in any meaningful sense. You know, like to me, I mean, Peter Hitchens is a conservative. Roger Scruton is a conservative. You know, I just don't recognize any of what.
Angela, are you saying that Peter Hitchens has never seen hentai?
That was actually why him and Christopher stopped talking to each other, is they disagreed on hentai.
Well, what's the difference though between this alt-right and alt-light?
Oh, I would say, I mean, obviously alt-light is a kind of like a macho term of derision to some extent. But I guess, you know, somebody like Milo is alt-light, somebody like Gavin McInnes. Basically, they don't have an actual political program that is based on racial segregation or anything like that. A lot of the time, you know, they make arguments like, liberals are the real racists or that kind of thing. And they're pro-free speech. And actually, you know, a lot of what they say kind of implies that they value liberal ideals, actually. And then they do random kind of offensive things. But I think the core of it is some kind of weird version of liberalism. Whereas the hard alt-right is much more, you know, openly white segregationist. And it really... stresses race as being the center of its politics.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, you brought up Gavin McInnes and mm-hmm. like his whole thing now is like I've read multiple times from him. It's like his press clippings now. I'm sure he has it on a business card at this point. But he's like, look, we're not racist. We're not white supremacists. We're Western chauvinists.
Yeah, that's right.
And he's like, I say the West is the best, but we don't say, like, that's not based on any kind of like genetic superiority. We just think it's the best because, you know, we created the internet or something, or cars or something like that.
They're bell curve racists rather than, like, you know, phrenologists. Like, they don't, they think it's cultural.
Yeah, and like, and McGinnis was saying something like, no, fuck no, we're not Nazis. Like, we kicked their ass in World War II and we'd do it again, just like our grandfathers. You know, like, that's kind of his thing. I think he's like more into this kind of like traditional masculinity,
yeah,
that is sort of tied to white identity, but like at the same time sort of flirting with cosmopolitan liberal culture.
It's very much, yeah, it's has a lot of trappings of sort of like Jacksonian conservatism, and it is, I'd say, the main identity difference is that alt-light, as it were, these are guys who mostly like came up through the media, as McGinnis and Yiannopoulos.
Yeah, they're
did.
Celebrities.
Yeah, and then they were like, oh, I love white identity. I do it all the time. Whereas these guys are,
well, the thing,
like,
about them is that they need a culturally liberal milieu to rebel against in order to have a brand a rebel. They would be absolutely useless in an actual white nationalist culture that had a hegemonic, racial awareness. They would be nothing. They'd be just be dickheads. They'd be fucking, you know, like laying bricks if they could get over their asthma or whatever. They only thrive in an environment of cultural liberalism. And that goes for their fans online, too. They're only able to gain any kind of meager pleasure in life from triggering people. And without that liberal cultural milieu to rebel against, they have no purpose. They have nothing. So I think one of the big splits is that, like, the real hardcore Nazis know that they're not really serious about changing anything. And nor could they be.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it
Gavin's
would totally
big
render
thing,
them useless.
Gavin's big thing is he had like a punk identity and built his brand on that. And then he got old and married and successful. And so he had to rebrand by saying, actually, the most punk thing you can do is become an advertising consultant and live in Park Slope with your family.
It's hip to be square.
Yeah.
I'm just saying different people have different brains and different hair.
Well, you know, Gavin McInnes is a good example, right? Because he's now, you know, telling people that they should marry and have loads of kids and, you know, have a kind of traditional marriage. But I was watching one of his shows a while ago, and he had some woman who's a porn star, like, masturbating live on the show. And, you know, I really just thought, this is the worst conservatism ever. Like,
just Howard Stern. Yeah.
I really can't imagine.
Angela, you saying that
Peter
that's
Hitchens
not
being
a traditional
impressed.
Marriage? No, I mean, I think one of his slogans is "Venerate the housewife."
I know.
Yeah, I'm considering getting that tattooed because I'm also punk.
That's my tramp stamp.
Well, do you know about Proud Boys?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, they're kind of like punks. I mean, they dress like, you know, that kind of Fred Perry style, and they wear matching Fred Perry clothes.
Angela, okay, so that's sort of like, I guess, like the alt light, which is this kind of, I guess I would describe as sort of like a lifestyle brand of kind of transgressive, sort of semi-patriarchal pseudo-conservatism, at least in reaction to kind of more mainstream liberal, you know, pieties or whatever. How would you define the parameters and beliefs of like the actual hardcore alt-right who like disdain these people? Like, you know, like, is that like just like the Daily Stormer or something?
Yeah, it would be the Daily Stormer, and it would be some parts of Paul and then I guess the more, you know, somebody like Richard Spencer and some of the people around him who are a bit older are trying to do something more serious and kind of theoretical and even policy oriented, if the name of their think tank is anything to go by. So they're trying to, I guess, be a bit more serious about things. But it really is the race issue that, you know, because the alt-light, I mean, for example, the talk that Milo gave before the Berkeley riot happened, I think it was the last one he gave before that, he actually said the alt-right is identity politics for white people, and I'm against identity politics, so you should all reject them. So he was actually, interestingly, like, even though you could kind of have spotted that earlier, he was actually marking that difference. And the interesting thing is that then the alt-right people who are still on Twitter responded by saying, if you want to keep losing, you can ignore race. But, you know, we think that, you know, you have to accept the race as real if you want to have any success, actually, on the right. Like, he's quite disdainful, Richard Spencer, of, pro-life, kind of anti-gay marriage conservatism.
Angela, I remember seeing a meme from one of these, like, more hardcore alt-right guys where it's just, like, a picture of the sort of leading lights of, I guess, like, these sort of self-promoting alt-light, I suppose. And I think it was, like, Prison Planet with Paul Joseph Watson, Milo, fucking probably McGinnis, and then Cernovich or something like that. And then it just went through. You'd be like, well, Milo's gay. We know that's his problem. And then the rest of them, it was just all about how they're married to non-white women and are just, like, you know, cucking their own race out of existence or something like that. So yeah, they are like that's the line, like the idea that these guys are posers in a way because they're not adhering to this, like, strict racial purity and hierarchy in their own personal lives.
But you mention very presciently in the article that this is a very unstable alliance they had. I mean, the only thing they had in common was Trump, and that's also the only thing they had in common with traditional conservatives. Obviously, like, traditional conservatives don't really want to be associated with, like, hardcore Nazis or with these insane, you know, Pepe basement trolls. It fell apart. What do you think is going to happen now that there's, like, this huge split now, if you have any predictions at all?
Well, the split was inevitable, really. You know, I mean, they were only held together by the fact that they were all so marginal.
And Trump, and then he won, and that's it.
Yeah. And of course they do all love Trump, but then I suppose in the case of Milo, the people who took him down don't love Trump, in many cases. In terms of predictions, I mean, I hope that they will just keep fighting and, and tear themselves apart. That would be great. But who knows? I mean, there's lots of they're meaner to each other than they are actually to anyone on the outside. If you look at them closely enough,
They are like leftists.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well,
that's the thing, and I think that is a fundamental reality of it that transcends even issues of ideological difference. These guys are always going to break up and hate each other and split up and put more venom towards one another than with anyone else, because the fundamental fact about these guys is that they fucking hate themselves because they are complete fucking failures in life. Of course, they've coated it in 500 layers of lacquered irony to try to cope with the essential self-hatred. But when they try to get together with other people who are just like them, when they see the other Pepe, they're seeing themselves. They're seeing the thing that they hate more than anything, which is them, and then they take all of that hatred, which is going to be way stronger than they could ever be for some abstracted foreign horde, and put it on that person.
Well, one of their big obsessions is basically that with the breakdown of traditional marriage and monogamy, particularly in America, that there's a kind of a sexual hierarchy among men, and that women are trying to mate up so that a very large number of women are interested in a small number of men. And then there's this very large...
Angela, the word is hypergamy, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. So that's one of their
podcasters are at the top of this pyramid.
I'm a hyper gamer.
But the reason that they're obsessed with it is because they are clearly in the group that are aggrieved, you know.
Yeah, no, they're the losers. They're on the outs, and they hate themselves for it. That's where it generates all of it. Like, the irony to protect themselves from it, and then the absolute misogyny, and then even past that, the misanthropy. It all just generates from that essential knowledge of their own absolute failure as a human being. And that's why, like, they can't, that's why so many of them don't even have ideology, like, they don't have ideas really beyond annoying other people, because that sadistic pleasure that they get from knowing that they've made someone else upset is really all that they can seek in life, is any kind of pleasure, because they're anhedonic toads.
They also have absolutely no, I mean, one of the things I say towards the end of the Jackman piece is that they actually don't like anything about the West. Like, they talk about European civilization and the West. I mean, those are slightly different, but, you know, they don't, first of all, I mean, Christianity is a problem for them. Most of them are openly, you know, not Christian. They don't claim to be Christian conservatives. But, you know, Christian morality is actually a problem for them. You know, it's if they're, you know, to take the scripture seriously in any way, they couldn't continue to hold the views that they do. They don't like any of the liberal tradition, and you could go on. I mean, there's all, once you take away from the history of the West everything that they don't like, then there's not a whole lot left.
That's a really interesting point. I mean, like, do you think that, like, I mean, a lot of them, I think, worship this kind of, like, or they go back to these sort of, like, pre-modern, like, pagan traditions, but, like, even that is a stretch, right?
Yeah, I mean, some of them do that, but that's really sad. I mean, that's sad.
Well, actually, I wanted to ask you, I mean, we brought it up a second ago, but, like, you said you started out studying kind of the red pill, sort of pickup artist culture, and this sort of, like, that thing is sort of a gateway drug, but that does seem to be a gateway drug into a lot of this. And I'm just wondering if you could sort of describe, or if you have a sense of this alchemy of how one goes from a kind of thwarted sexual ambition to hating women to literally hating everyone and everything else. Because you like race is their abiding obsession, but, like, misogyny is sort of the gateway drug, right?
It's still, and it all just ends in nihilism.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's very much about, the big theme is civilizational decline. Like, they all believe we are right at the cusp of civilizational collapse. And, you know, you go into a rabbit hole. I mean, we all go into, like, weird kind of rabbit holes sort of politically, you know, online, because, of course, you constantly get recommended things that relate to what you've already looked at and that kind of thing. So they go into a rabbit hole where they're just constantly looking at, you know, material that, you know, reinforces their worldview, to a point where they get, you know, obsessed and almost panicked about this feeling they have that everything's about to collapse. So they're looking around them and they're saying, okay, so for example, let's say in Britain, where there's a very large Muslim immigrant population, they're looking at young Muslim people who are not drinking, who are, you know, going to college and who are maybe married. And then they look around at their own white Western friends who are maybe childless, a bit hedonistic in their lifestyle and so on. And, you know, they just think, you know, we're weak. And the people around us are strong, and they're growing in numbers. And that is the feeling they have. If you say fear, it almost makes it sound like you're sort of feeling bad for them. But I think it is a kind of fear.
You described it as a fear, but do you think it's also maybe a little bit of a jealousy? Like, for instance, in very traditional societies, like, if you are a young man from an okay family, like, it's basically you will get a wife.
Mm. Yeah, definitely jealousy is in there in a big way. And I guess the jealousy of other men, of course, as well, is big. But for some reason, they only seem to take it out on women.
Well, that's just common sense. yeah, but I mean, it seems like the makeup of a lot of these people, granted, you know, I don't want to, like, overstate, like, the influence of the alt-right or whatever, because honestly, the people who elected Trump are the people who elect every Republican, and that's, like, a traditional Republican base. But this is very interesting because it seems to be a right-wing youth movement, which we're not used to seeing, and that's why people are like, oh shit, the last time we remember this historically tends to be sort of, like, actual Nazis, especially because they're kind of nihilistic and they're not traditionally conservative in a way. I think Sam Chris had a really good line where he's like, everyone thinks of the Nazis as like dour and oppressive. He's like, but the Nazis love to fuck. The Nazis love to party. The Nazis love to laugh. Like the idea of a sort of liberatory kind of idea of conservatism or whatever that is in no way beholden to actual traditional conservative values is like a strange new beast. And it seems to be mainly like younger people, like men, like in their like young 30s or younger, correct?
Mm. And also, I mean, you know, sometimes there are parts of the left that give them a lot of material to be funny about. You know, I mean, I think we kind of have to admit that. Like there are, you know, endless like videos, for example, that they produce and endless sort of memes about the more absurd end of the maybe Tumblr kind of liberal left. And, you know, like a lot of people ended up in the alt-right because they were finding those memes and things funny, you know, and they started sharing them and, you know, so they were kind of letting them be funny in a way by people on our side being so ridiculous sometimes.
Well, Angela, actually, I have a quote here from the article that I think speaks to this. You write, the war for the soul of America Pat Buchanan waged in the 1990s has long since been won by the cultural left. And the tyrannical overreach of the liberal intellectual conformity undoubtedly helped create the youthful rebellion against it. But this temporary alliance of very different factions, the most stark being between the traditionalist right and the libertinism of Chan culture, has produced a schizophrenic incoherence. But like sort of like we were talking about with the alt-light people, like a lot of it, like again, like if sex and is one gateway drug, I think the other gateway drug is the thrill that comes from puncturing a certain kind of sanctimony when you live in an overwhelmingly a culture which is, forget the politics, but a culture in which the sort of mores are overwhelmingly dictated by liberalism.
In media culture, at least. Yeah. That's the weird thing is that, like, you know, liberal values have not won the majority of America, but they have won media culture.
As somebody who has been posting over half his life and posting ironically at that, sort of the cultural battle between, yeah, this incoherent coalition and the insufferable liberal media elite, it's the divergent paths of the internet. The alt-right, in some ways, is sort of like the logical conclusion of the old internet before there was monetization and a real media presence there. When it was really mean, it was fucking hilarious, it was purely fun, but it was also incredibly sad. You know, my memory of that internet is just you and a bunch of other 15-year-olds and some fucked up adults, and you're being misanthropic, and then you have some adults who really believe it, and that's sort of the same confluence that you have in the modern alt-right. But the new internet, these people who showed up in the latter half of the aughts, are the liberal media elite. And they still have a lot of that meanness of the old internet, but it is channeled into calling people out or dragging people or whatever the fuck. It's just the same sort of like sublimated desire and power to do something without really doing something that existed on the old internet but applied to liberal values. But this is, yeah, it's a very appropriate war of two logical conclusions of those two paths of the internet before monetization and after.
Yeah, well, and also, you know, sacrilege is very appealing.
Yeah.
In the face of like liberal piety, that's why we are popular. Yeah, I mean, it's just strange to me that they went weird fucking racism and misogyny instead of just becoming like pot-smoking socialists like the rest of us.
I mean, because like the quickest, you know, the thing that rewards you the most on that part of the internet, like our kind of the internet too, is like how much something upsets people.
Yeah.
What's going to upset somebody the most?
Trolling is currency.
It's absolutely currency. And if you previously didn't really have a belief system, which I can't imagine a lot of these people did, given that a lot of them are like, you know, 15, 16.
Yeah, no one has a belief system that's coherent at 15,
right,
or 16.
Exactly. And you live in some place like fucking North Dakota, and you see like any fucking asshole lib on Twitter, you're like, what would upset this person the most? Well, there's a prefab system of trolling that's sort of an ideology that you both upset this type of person you fucking can't stand, and you get to have an identity.
Yeah, that's true. It does make a lot of sense. I mean, Angela, you had some quote. It was like some parable that you told me once.
The proverb was, if you don't initiate your young men into the tribe, they will burn down the village. And, you know, there is definitely a feeling of that among a lot of the younger men who, you know, just have a very destructive impulse. And all of it is kind of lacking, you know, however bad right-wing politics may have been in the past, it was always in some way kind of tamed by, I suppose, a Christian ethos, or, you know, it had some kind of redeeming elements, like trying to preserve, you know, great art and great music and great kind of cultural traditions. This just has none of that. It has absolutely not a single positive thing that comes from, you know, the Western tradition.
Because those other types of conservatives, they felt like there was something for them in the thing they were defending. They thought that they could get a benefit. They thought that they could get a family out of it, or they could get standing in a community or something like that, or wealth. These guys have no illusion that they'll ever get anything from society.
And, you know, they're aware of that. They talk about that quite a bit. Like, they say things, I mean, when I start to get worried is when they say things that, you know, we should be saying also and do. But they say, for example, you know, why is it that, you know, in let's say America in the 50s, a one income family could live a decent life and have a home? Why do we have to have two now? And of course, it's because they're thinking along the same lines as Michelle Welbeck. They're thinking, you know, we don't need women to be in the workplace. But as you know, it is an economic sort of economic argument that is going to, you know, I can see why it would appeal to some people.
Yeah, but it's an incoherent.
You know, guys, I'm starting to worry that maybe late capitalist alienation is bad.
Yeah, and an incoherent ideology cobbled together by 15-year-olds is maybe kind of terrifying.
Well, that's why I'm actually interested by this other thing that really seems to be the real natural outgrowth of this internet culture. And I don't know if any of you guys have heard of it. Have you guys heard of the Black Pill?
Matt, you have explained this to me, but maybe for our listeners, you should lay it out.
See, Black Pill, from what I understand, are the guys who say, yeah, everything's shit, everything is terrible. We reject the illusions of feminism and liberalism and all of those lies, but we also reject the false promise that anything could get better if we brought back patriarchy or instituted segregation. Nihilism is the only thing that makes sense. And so their, like, heroes aren't Nazis or Trump or anything like that. It's school shooters and ISIS recruits, basically. and to me, it's like, that seems like, if these guys really thought about it, frankly, I think a lot of them would end up there. I mean, because they should really stop and think, like, what are you really after here? What do you really believe that Trump is going to make your life better? You obviously don't. He's going to make people you don't like mad, but that's not going to get you out of the basement.
Well, at least they know that what they're doing is pointless. You know, they have that going for them. The others haven't realized this yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot less stupid than looking at a morbidly obese reality TV guy who tried to fuck Nancy O'Dell by buying her furniture and just blathers on about Diet Coke and ratings going, he's going to bring back the white race. He's going to bring
back. Well, yeah, but I think for a lot of them, the fact that he is an oaf and an obvious moron is an appeal. It's an attraction, because what better troll than to literally troll the entirety of American political tradition? Like, you've trolled the office of the presidency. You've trolled the West, the entire ethos.
Matt, I know you saw this the other day, but I read Jeb Lund's most recent article in Esquire, where he went to Trump's sort of post-election rally in Melbourne, Florida. Yeah, and, you know, he describes some very bone chilling things among the fans who turned out, but among the young people, there is one line where these, like, you know, 20-year-old kids are just like, "LOL, I'm here for the memes." And it's just like that. Like, that to me is like again that weird nihilism and like the spectacle of it all, where it's just like they're happy to take part in this kind of like mass political, like the old style fascist like mass political rallies, but with some kind of like meta ironic distance. They're just like, "I'm here," just LOL, basically.
Yeah. Well, Angela has actually taught, you know, people who have like admitted to being like Milo fans, and they're not particularly ideological, right?
Yeah. And also, like, I had one particular student who was a really big Milo fan, and, you know, he was really smart, and he would come in and, you know, in a class where nobody wants to talk, he wanted to talk constantly. And, you know, he had always come in having read all this like InfoWars and stuff like that. And, you know, on the first day, we were talking about media bias, and he put up his hand, and the very first thing he said was about liberal media bias against Vladimir Putin. And I was thinking, is he on the left or the right? But, you know, also, just from what you were talking about, you know, this idea that they have of bringing back patriarchy, and they say this sometimes. I mean, one of the things that got me thinking about the absurdity of, or, you know, the fact that their libertinism and the conservatism just doesn't make any sense, and, you know, one or other can't be true, is that, you know, when they talk about patriarchy, you can really tell they have no idea of what that actually is. Because one of the kind of benefits of coming from sort of rural Irish perspective is that, you know, Ireland kind of developed economically very late and was very, you know, strictly Catholic until relatively recently. So, for example, my grandmother had 12 children, and nine of them were boys, and, you know, they were all very, you know, very traditional, and the men were traditional in their roles and so on. But you know, a great deal was expected of them. You know, being a patriarch, if you like, you know, was very much about duty and toil, and, like, you know, it wasn't like they have this crazy vision that it's going to be, you know, just like kind of porn, but in real life or something like that. I don't know what they think it is.
It's not like the reality. Let's say, an Irish guy in like the early to mid 20th century, pretty fucking hard.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for example, if you imagine what it must have been like to be the sole breadwinner of a family of 12, you know what I mean? Like
in the mines,
you know, there'd be no time for gaming.
No
time for gaming, I mean, whatsoever.
So it was like, I mean, definitely they had authority in the household. You know, the father always had the ultimate authority in the household, but it was absolutely nothing like they're imagining.
Yeah, it was literally at the expense of their lifespan. Like, you work yourself to death. And so it's like, you're in control of your, like, you know, like 12 Dickensian Moppets. But really, it's not that great, because you're going to work 12 hours a day and then, like, die at 55 from black lung or some shit. Like, patriarchy is a real drag, but they have, like, this weird utopian view of, like, what it must be to be a patriarch.
Hey, everyone wants to be the boss, but nobody wants to work for it.
Patriarchy was so good that French peasants just formed a human wave and threw themselves at castles. So good. They were throwing themselves in gratitude.
I will now do a selection from my one-man show, Hitler Sings.
When will I be special? When will I be someone who's loved for me?
If I stumble upon a me at the door, will I open it wide or close it and look through the peephole? I want to.
Folks, there's something you should know about David Cross. He attended public schools, and he confuses Hitler with Anne Frank. David Cross, everyone!
Watch your blood pressure, chubby. You're liable to bust the mainspring. Schmierkäse, Dolph, der Cheapenskaten, der Schneckenpfeffer in der Grassenplatz. Oh, do I hate that Hitlerschwein, that phony Führer, that... Heil Hitler. So, wo macht ein Blitzkrieg ein Abersauerhaufen mit seiner Hand unter den Linden, mit Stammeln in der Backe, obfassend Pfeffer, Bluten, 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 Toten, mit roten Toten. So. Ach, mein Führer, it's not what you're thinking. It's all a mistake. I kiss my Führer's hand. I kiss right in the Führer's face. Oh, I'm a bad Fluten boy Gluten. Heil, heil. Heil, heal, heal me. Look, single-handed, I have captured that American rabbit, sir, Bogsenheimer Bonnie. That's good, yeah, yeah. It's good, no? Yeah, it's good. I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you this genuine life guarantee diamond-studded 14-karat gold decoration.
Your tobacco tastes different lately.
Angela, I get to this point, I wanted to ask you about another weird mutation in all of this that I've noticed recently, where, again, we talked about how sort of in the early days of this and sort of the gateway drug for a lot of people is this kind of red pill and like pickup artist culture about, hey, like, no, like it's just a game. And if you know the code, like you can get laid as much as you want. And like, you know, you deserve to get laid and like it's all there for you if you're just like willing to take it, right? And I think a lot of people bought into that and then were disappointed when it didn't work. And now I've noticed that a lot of these guys, like particularly who are really obsessed with like hating women on the alt-right, have now obsessed with this idea of what they call a trad wife, where they've given up on the goal of being promiscuous and they're just like, all I want is just one woman who basically has never had sex and has no knowledge of like contemporary American culture or self-esteem that I can get away with just like bossing around.
Someone to bring you, someone to heat up your Totinos.
Their fantasy is basically to live in a world in which the sexual revolution has taken place for men, but not for women. You know, they and even if you look at somebody like Roosh V, you know, I mean, okay, so he writes a series of those bang books, and then he says, oh, I really care about tradition and patriarchy. It's like, no, you can't have patriarchy and that at the same time. If you have patriarchy, you have, you know, massive, like, you know, you have,
you can't
one
be a sex tourist and a patriarch.
Yeah, you can't have patriarchy and then write a series of books about how literally to fuck someone's sister or daughter.
Exactly. So they're very confused. I mean, none of it really makes a great deal of sense. And this thing that's happened with Milo, you know, is just one example of it. But I think we're going to see loads more of this because that contradiction is all over the place. It's in every single aspect of the alt right through to the softest forms of the alt right. They're all deeply confused about tradition. They want the benefits of tradition, but they don't want to actually have to have all the duties of tradition.
Yeah, I mean, if you, and just generally, if you have an entire system of belief that's centered around, you know, sort of outside of politics, more of a social thing, if you just do these few things, you're not going to hate yourself and want to fucking die anymore. You're not going to be like on a cum encrusted keyboard just wishing that you were born someone else. There's that. You're never going to be able to do enough shit to not feel that way. It was just some goofy shit from 400 fucking years ago. It's never going to be enough. So they're just going to probably keep cannibalizing because they're still going to feel like shit at the end of the day. It's, I mean, there is the, you know, when prophecy fails type things, maybe some will go deeper into it, but it doesn't strike me as an incredibly sustainable thing, you know, promising sort of 19-year-old neats that they're not going to feel like shit.
Yeah, it seems like a small number of people might double down and like maybe move towards like the more Spencerized kind of stuff, but like, I figure there's got to be a high washout rate.
I mean,
right?
Even that, like Spencer, didn't Spencer and his wife like break up because, oh God, I wonder why.
But, I don't like to speculate.
Yeah. I mean, someone's close with their mom, whatever.
it's not weird to love your mother. It's just, you know, it's traditional.
Yeah, she's a tribe of trad mom.
So one of the other weird things about this is that like because you write about, you know, you write about a lot of weird online subcultures, and but because the alt-right is a youth subculture, they've obviously discovered you, like, and they know who you are. Like, how do they? You're on Twitter now, like,
yeah.
How do they respond to you?
I did an interview once, and one of them was saying to the guy interviewing me, "You should breed with her."
wait, why? Because you were both like, you know, fine specimens of, you know, Anglo-Celtic culture or what?
Yeah, I guess so. Although,
are they okay with redheads? Is that a no-go? I mean,
no, the alt-right must love redheads because that's like the whitest people on earth, right?
Yeah, exactly. I know. You would think they would. But it's also confusing because Irish are low IQ.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, okay.
Well, American Irish people specifically.
That's true, yeah. Never content,
I absolutely
never
love all the Irish American bashing that goes on in this show.
Oh, thank you.
We work hard on it. I know one redhead that they could make their leader. Hint: his whole style is chump puke. There's just a little problem they have to get over.
Major hurdle that they need to clear.
Look, look. Not everything's perfect, but everything else about him, outside of that one thing, Michael Rapaport is perfect.
He's the Ashkenazi gorilla, right? Yeah.
I want to clarify that Michael Rapaport is not racist. I actually like him as a character actor, even though he said my style was jump. I don't think he's racist or would lead a white identitarian.
He's the opposite. Yeah. He's the opposite of racist, to be honest.
Well, we know why you're sticking with him.
Look, I just noticed that none of our people died during the filming of the movie Copland. And at least you know.
Yeah, so I guess Angela, they're like, it seems like some of them are like hostile to you, I assume, but like then sometimes they seem to like that you're actually looking at them, and like, even though you're not writing very flattering things, you're writing things in detail, and you've no one wants to go through the chance and like look at this shit. I don't. I'm not going to do it. But they seem to be kind of pleased that someone is doing like this ethnography of this weird youth subculture.
Yeah, actually, a funny thing about them is, even if you say absolutely terrible things about them, the only time that they get really angry is if you're slightly inaccurate. You know what I mean?
Like, they're pedants.
Well, yeah, that's pedantry is the most inexhaustible resource online. I swear to God.
Yeah, and 15-year-old boys just discovered it. That and masturbation.
That's posting culture.
This armband is not from the SS. This is from the SA. The Stumbart outfit, the brown shirts.
If you say, you know, these guys are like sociopaths and they're, you know, degenerate and, you know, just every terrible thing you could possibly think of, they won't even respond to that. But if you slightly, you know, if you put one of their thinkers in slightly the wrong category, they will go nuts about that, and they get incredibly angry about it.
Like music nerds, they're boys. They're boys. They're like, excuse me, this is post-punk. Like, what is your problem?
Yeah. I mean, when Spencer got punched, he was like, actually, the Nazis don't like me.
Yeah, and they really don't get that, like, outside of their subculture, people don't really care that much about these.
I'll have you know that Julius Evola, he rejected Mussolini, not technically a fascist.
It's, I mean, it is really dumb for those people to get like super specific about their distinctions. It's not like a real thing. Like when someone confuses Solid Snake with Big Boss, they call the sport of mixed martial arts UFC. These things are unforgivable.
I mean, we probably all do it.
Well, Angela, I thank you for having for coming on. We don't really know that much about these people because, like we said, they're
I don't
like,
want to.
They're they're sticky and gross, and I don't want to touch them. But I am actually really looking forward to the book. So it's it's going to be out. You've got a book coming out, Kill All Normies. It's going to be out on Zero. Do you know about when that's going to come out?
I think the end of April-ish.
Okay, that's exciting. Soon I'm already enough. Like bugging Zero for advanced copies. We definitely want to read it and, you know, maybe have you on again when it comes out.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, great. I'd love to.
Yeah. Thank you for digging through the minds of the deepest, darkest internet.
Oh, you're welcome. I want to stop soon.
I don't blame you. All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Angela.
Angela, thanks so much for talking to us.
Yes, thank you.
All right.